Going Linux number 49, Computer America number 8. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish 3 episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 8th appearance on the Computer America show from November 18th, 2008.
This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Well, hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Today is Tuesday, the 18th of November, 2008. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And you had a good weekend, I take it, Carrie?
I've been busy.
Yeah, you have. Saw Quantum of Solace.
And?
I liked it a lot. I think it was very, very
good. I heard it was not the typical James Bond movie.
It
didn't feel like a James Bond movie.
It
felt more like a Bourne Ultimatum or something.
It is because it's the whole idea is that it's back to the beginning. It's how the original... It's like the original before the gadgets, before all the high tech stuff, and it's more, more realistic, I guess.
I heard this one's supposed to take place like 45 minutes or something after the ending of the previous movie.
It does, and it continues on, and you see the Bond character develop into.
Rent it or see it in the theater.
I'd say see it in the theater. I think it's great.
Okay.
I enjoyed it a lot. Did you see the Casino Royale, the first one with Daniel Craig?
Yes.
Okay. Did you like that?
Yes.
All right, then you'll like this, too. It's a continuation of it. And there are some things that get resolved in this one as well. So it's
well, based on your recommendation, I will see that in the theater this weekend.
Especially if you liked the first one.
If I don't like it, I'm going to blame you. Demand my money back.
But if you like the first one, you will like the second one.
I'm sure. You know, it's pretty tough to make a bad James Bond movie. Yeah. Though they've managed to do it, but I'm actually looking forward to seeing it.
There you go.
Well, hey, what was the deal with the website?
Mike Cermak said were having server problems, and a great deal of server problems, but evidently it's been resolved. The website is up and running again over the weekend. Evidently they were having some problems. I don't know how the details. All I do know is that he said that they were having bad problems.
All I know is we were having some difficulty getting into the chat room and the website last night, but everything seems to be working tonight.
Yeah, it's all working tonight. Even my email, because my email is at computeramerica.com. I was having difficulty getting my email, too, so it was all similar. But evidently it's all it's been fixed.
Resolved.
Yes, it's resolved.
Excellent.
So now let's, of course, our Computer America contest continues on as well. I heard from Lonnie Paul, who's the director of e-commerce for CompUSA. We're going to do a little promotion for and talk about their Pink Friday, which comes up right after November, Thanksgiving. So we're going to possibly for tomorrow's Wednesday Madness, we might have him on to talk about that for a little bit.
I think that's going to be even more successful this year than it's been in years past, given the economy and the way that it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had an email come in talking about all the stores that are closing, Circuit City stores, Ann Taylor stores, Lane Bryant stores, Fashion Bug, Catherine's, Eddie Bauer, Talbot's, J. Jill. Gap is closing 85 stores. Foot Locker is closing 140 stores. Levitt's is closing down remaining stores. Disney is closing 98 stores and is going to close more after January. Home Depot is closing 15 stores. Macy's is going to close 9. Pep Boys closing 33 stores. Sprint Nextel closing 133 stores. JCPenney is closing a number of stores after January.
Depressed.
Ethan Allen's closing down 12 stores. Wilson Leather is closing down all their stores. Sharper Image is closing down all their stores.
Well, I knew about
KB Toys is closing 356 stores. Lowe's is about to close down some stores, and Dillard's is to close some stores. It's getting bad. So, you know, to find a good deal from a reputable seller, I think Tiger Direct and CompUSA, especially with the Pink Friday, with the prices that they offer, there's much less competition out there. You're not going to be shopping at Circuit City, I don't think.
Well,
I think it's going to go very well for them this year.
On the flip side of that too, I think that some things are getting better. I mean, gas prices are coming down. You know,
I'm just waiting for them to go back up again, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think in some places it's actually broken the below the $2 mark. It's in the $1 amount.
I heard in Arkansas it was $1.89 again.
Yeah,
now
amazing.
Here in Phoenix it's about $2.15.
Yeah, it's about $2.14 here. So that certainly has improved as well. People can start to afford driving the cars
again.
They
can now start, they can do what I'm doing now, and that is start being able to pay back their gasoline credit card.
Yeah. So it's exactly. And of course, I hear a lot of good things about consumer confidence possibly coming restored, especially with the new, after the election and some of the things that's going on. I just
hope with the closing of these stores that the stores that do remain open, like right now, like if I go to Home Depot, there's like one cashier and the rest is self-checkout. I would much rather go out of my way to Home Depot that had every single cashier filled that you could walk right up, not wait in a line for 15 minutes, buy your stuff, and actually, you know, I go back to the flooring department, can't find anybody to help me.
Listen, I'll tell you, my wife and I went out this weekend, and we were at the malls, and we went to Barnes & Noble, and the place was packed. I mean, it was hard to get a parking space. We were at the Barnes & Noble getting some books, and I said, oh, and they had like six or seven checkouts, and they were all filled up. We had to wait in line. I said, boy, it looks like things are bustling. And she said, yeah, about time. She said, things are going really, really well. So every place we went and tried to go shopping, there were lines. I mean,
I can tell you, when I was in Orlando, it didn't look like there was anything going on. I mean, as far as money problems, because, you know, the place was packed, and it's everything's very expensive there.
Yeah,
and even the McDonald's there charges more money.
Yeah. Well, as I said, every place that we went to over the weekend, the malls, everything, it was hard pressed to get parking spots. So to me, it seems to, you know, things look good. So, let's end that on an up note, and let's now get into what we're going to be talking about, because this is the third Tuesday of the month, and we dedicate the third Tuesday of the month to the Linux operating system because it continues to be more and more popular. Especially in the wake of Microsoft's, you know, Vista, and yet people still wonder, you know, is Linux right for me? And, you know, but it's an important operating system, and we, as I said, we devote the entire show to Linux in order to answer questions, your questions you might have about it. And if you have a Linux question, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome back into Computer America.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. This is great.
Isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. So what was your did you go out shopping or did you go where are you based out of?
I'm based out of Yorba Linda, California.
Okay.
I've heard of that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Now, that's not anywhere near where the fires are, is it?
There was a house that burned down about a mile and a half from mine.
Oh my gosh.
I'd say that's pretty close.
It is pretty close. Wow.
Yes. Scary close.
But
although we weren't in a mandatory evacuation area or even a voluntary evacuation area, the wind from the fires the wind was blowing the smoke from the fires directly at our house. So we decided, in order to be able to breathe, we should evacuate. So we did for most of Saturday, and then came back home about 11:30 at night.
How is it looking out there? They say that it's starting to get under control.
Yeah, starting to get under control, and there's a lot of black hillsides, and as I was driving to work this morning, you could smell the smoke in the air, and devastating sight as you drove through some neighborhoods. Yeah,
I can imagine. And again, the horrific thing about all this is that evidently it was arson.
Yeah, arson for one of the fires, and the other ones, the one that they dubbed the Triangle Fire, the one that actually was responsible for the damage in Yorba Linda, was, in my understanding, a spark from a car on the freeway happened to light a very dry tree right next to the freeway on fire, which turned into a brush fire, which turned into devastation.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so that one was not arson.
Well, I just hope they catch the people who do that. I mean, that's just
yeah,
that's just horrible, horrible stuff. Anyway, as I said, well, we started a bound note, then a positive note, then now let's get back.
Now
to
we're
a,
back on
that. Let's get back to a positive note, yeah. Note here, and I know we have a lot of things to talk about. Usually, what I do is I discuss with Larrick some of the topics that we're going to that he'd like to talk about with Linux, and of course tonight is no exception. And one of the main topic that we're going to kind of address is a question that is basically is, can I use my old familiar software if I switch to Linux? This is one, I think this is the underlying theme for tonight. And I know we have lots of emails and responses to that, but, we'll just kind of approach this out of the gate. First of all, would you want to use your old familiar software if you switch to Linux? And then, I mean, when you start with something new, a new operating system, do you want to start with a clean slate and just start off with something new? I mean, do you really want to bring older, legacy stuff into the Linux environment?
Well, it depends on your definition of old familiar software. You know, if you have an email software program that you like, or you have, let's say, some word processing software that you like, or some other software that you like that is cross-platform, in other words, you can use it on Windows or Mac or Linux, then, of course, you can use it on Linux.
Now, when you say you like, I always wondered about that because you say, well, I really like this word processor. But, you know, sometimes the word, quote-unquote, like really translates to be something that I'm comfortable with. And when you're comfortable with something, you know, it sometimes precludes you from trying something new that's different, you know, that that might in fact be a lot better. And I'm guilty of this too. I mean,
we all are.
Yeah, but the point is when you try something that's new, not always, but a lot of times when you do, you'll go, wow, this is so much easier because you're dealing with a newer technology, that more thought is going to it, you know, they maybe have a few years of development. It takes advantage of some of the new technologies that are out there, so basically, using your quote-unquote old familiar software, software that you like, might not necessarily be a good thing. I mean, if you're going to make a big switch to Linux, I'm not saying you have to go cold turkey and run everything new from the start. I mean, but the point is, you might want to explore some of the newer things.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. But for the average user switching from Windows, let's say they are caught in this economic word today and they were planning on purchasing a new computer, but they just don't have the budget. Mm-hmm. And they're forced to look at some other things, and they may be attracted to Linux because it's free, but they really don't want to learn new software. They really have a hard time adjusting to the fact that they're going to have to learn a new operating system. And if they do that, they finally decide to make the plunge, and everything is different. Everything is absolutely unfamiliar. Things are different names. They don't work the same. That can be very scary. And so my thought in posing this question as our topic today is to help those people who have decided to make that plunge into using something different on their computer to run the computer, the operating system, that it would make the transition a little bit easier if they could use their existing mail program, or they could use something that's familiar at least for a while until they can get used to how Linux works, and then venture out and try something new.
Now, how is... I can take, again, I'm speaking from the Mac side, I can take an application or something, and I don't even have to crack the manual. I mean, it's pretty much intuitive. A lot of it is intuitive. Yes, granted, if I want to do something and I can't figure it out, then I have the book and I go and I refer to the book. But a lot of it is, sort of intuitive. Now, in Linux, do you have that same thing going on, or are things more cryptic?
No, you have a lot of help, a lot of online as well as on the software, and we can talk about what that is
when we come back. All right, this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight here on the Computer America Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. If you want to join in and you have questions for me, Carrie, or our guest tonight, we're talking about Linux. You can call us toll-free at 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. That number will get you on and get you through. You can also send emails to us if you don't want to go in the air. It's a great way to ask a question. Live, that's L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. Or you can join us in our chat room. The way that works is you go to Computer America homepage. On the left-hand side there, it says chat with us. You pick a username. That's the name you'll be known by when you go into the chat room. You click the join button, and your Java-enabled browser, be it on a Windows machine, Linux, Mac, Vista, it all works. It'll move you into the Computer America chat room, where our guest for this evening, Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, is joining us. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and we devote the entire show to the Linux operating system. Larry, so just before the break, we were talking about motivations for getting Linux and whether the fact that, you know, should you investigate new things or should just, you know, just kind of hold your nose and jump in and cold turkey or try to use some of the things that you're more familiar with. And if you can you use your old familiar software if you switch to Linux? So these are some of the issues that we're kind of looking at here.
Right, absolutely. And one of the things we were talking about just before the break was the availability of help for those programs that might not be intuitive. And many of the programs today in Linux are very intuitive. They have the graphical user interface that you expect when you open up a Windows or a Mac machine. They're very similar on Linux. There's a start menu of sorts, may look a little bit different on some distributions of Linux, and there is an extensive help system within the applications themselves, as well as on the Linux documentation that comes with your computer and with the operating system if you've installed Linux on it yourself. And there is online support through chat, through forums for your distribution and other Linux distributions. Linux is Linux, and many of the help tips that come off of the forums from one distribution apply in another. And there are a lot of support sites that are available for Linux users across the internet, not just from the Linux distribution itself, but places like linuxquestions.org that are geared to helping Linux users regardless of the distribution they use. So there's plenty of help, plenty of manuals to read if you're the kind that reads the manual, and if you're the kind that doesn't read the manual, much of the software is intuitive. I think, you know, Mac has done a really good job of making everything that they do as intuitive as humanly possible, and they probably have a leg up on every other operating system out there. So I can't say that Linux or Windows or Solaris or any operating system has software that's as intuitive as what the Mac has, but in Linux at least, it's coming close.
Well, let me ask you this. This is probably not a fair question because everybody is different, but I'm trying to go for the median here. Let's take someone who's very familiar with Windows, comfortable using Windows, and that says something right there about the person, that they're computer savvy. So I'm trying to work with someone, and then they decide to move over to Linux for whatever reasons. What's the average amount of time that's going to take someone to get comfortable with this operating system, given the fact that, you know, I realize there are a lot of different people. It's probably a very tough question to answer, but yeah. You know, generally here, you know, the average, you know, technically proficient Windows user, you know, that means they obviously have a knack for it, you know. So what kind of transition is it? Is it really something?
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. Is it something that's fairly, easy to move over to?
You're absolutely right. It depends on the individual. And to some degree, it depends on which Linux distribution they start with. If they start with something like Slackware, they're going to have a very, very difficult time because Slackware is designed for the computer geek, and in particular the Linux geek, who knows what they're doing. So that's one that I would steer people away from. Not that it's bad, but for a newbie, it's going to be more difficult than starting with the most popular one, which is Ubuntu, which many people looking at Linux think Ubuntu is Linux. It's that popular. If you start with something like Ubuntu or something like Mandriva that's meant for a newer user but has all of the power of a Slackware or the more sophisticated in air quotes, I guess, Linux distributions, if you start with one of the ones that's geared for the newbies, you're going to have a much easier time. Things will look familiar. They'll be a little different, but, for example, in the chat room, somebody, I forget who now, had mentioned that it's easier to find applications, find programs on Linux than it is on Windows. And I suggested that it might be because in Windows, when you click on the Start menu and you go to Programs, you find the software listed by manufacturer or by software publisher, and then the name of the program. When you click on the Applications menu, or the equivalent of the Start menu in Ubuntu, you see things like accessories, or graphics, or Internet, and then you find things like web browser.
Right.
It's not branded. It's generic.
And if you know how to use a browser, you're pretty much, you're there,
Who cares what it's called?
Exactly.
It's a browser.
You got a back hour, 4 hour, and exactly. You got to put in the URL. All right, hey, this is the Computer America Show. It's all Linux tonight. Stay with us.
Computer America.
You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. All this hour and the next hour, Larry Bushy will continue on with us. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, and we are talking about Linux. Specifically, can I use my old familiar software if I switch to Linux? And there's a lot of tangents that that question brings up and directions because, there are so many... People, I think that's one of the people are afraid of new things, or try different things. But sometimes, as you say, the wallet dictates what we do, and in this case, I think that's happening to a lot of people where they can't afford to spend hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars on software, can't afford to buy the newer hardware, but still want something different. And switching to a free operating system and free software certainly has to be. Very attractive.
Oh, absolutely. And if you've got Firefox Firefox web browser and let's say the Thunderbird mail client installed on your Windows or your Mac and you're switching over to Linux, those are available for Linux as well. And so and they work exactly the same way in Linux as they do in Windows. So it's an easier transition if somebody can bring that old familiar software and not have to learn how to surf the web again using something different begin learning some of the other things that are different and then maybe exploring some of the other web browsers that are available in Linux later once they've learned the things that they have to learn up front to use Linux that's different.
Hey, Carrie, when you doing your thing, as a computer technician, do you get many people asking you, hey, I've been hearing about Linux, I'm thinking about switching over, or should I switch it over? Or does anyone approach you with that question?
Never.
Really? No. Why? Why do you think that is?
I don't know why. I never really thought about it. Sometimes they might ask me my opinion on the Macs, or but I don't think they know what it is.
Well, do you think that's part of the problem? I mean, maybe they knew that maybe the mission here is to let people know that there is an alternative beside. You know, I guess, you know, this is, you see, the, we see this in a lot of product, in the product arena, Larry, you know, where you know there's, you know, you've got two big name items and the other ones, a lot of people just don't know they're there. They figure, oh, I only have two choices here in this matter. It's either Windows or Mac. It's either PC or Mac, you know? A part of it is
perception.
Yes, you there. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Okay, I had a lot of echo in the background there. Sounded like somebody's living room or something for a second.
Oh, no, we hear you fine. Yeah.
Yeah,
Did you hear what I said?
Yes. Okay. And I think that's probably the major stumbling block to Linux is the fact that it doesn't have this multi-million dollar marketing machine behind it, like the $300 million that Microsoft has put into advertising Vista, of all things.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know? And, of course, the Apple's put a lot of money into advertising there, and the Mac, too.
Just a little, yeah.
It's interesting. Well, all right, we're going to just break for 60 seconds, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room.
And we're back with the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We're talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. It's the third Tuesday of the month. It's our All Linux show for both hours tonight. An email just came in with a Linux question. And by the way, if you'd like to send in your Linux question, you can do so. The email address is live, L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com. Chris writes in and says, I was trying to install Ubuntu but was running into a problem. I finally narrowed the problem down to being two SATA hard drives hooked up. No matter which version of Linux I used, it would not find my hard drives. If I disconnected one of the SATA hard drives, I could run the Ubuntu Live CD without making changes to the hard drive. I found online where some people who had this problem ran theirs in RAID mode or AHCI mode, and it worked. Also, some said they tried to install by disconnecting one drive, installing Linux, then reconnecting the other. I don't know if that would work since you need a boot manager. I want to keep Vista on my main drive and put Linux on the other. What am I doing wrong? I've tried the AHCI mode, but I got a blue screen on Vista when I tested it first. Thank you, Chris.
Hmm.
Well, thanks for the email, Chris.
Yes.
You know, I can tell you if you switch to AHCI mode, then you need to reinstall Vista again with AHCI mode enabled. That you can't switch the mode because you're effectively changing the controller and then Windows doesn't have the driver for it anymore. So, you know, the other alternative to that would be to image that drive with something like a Cronus TrueImage and then use the Universal Restore to restore it back so it reloads that driver for that controller. But that's why you're getting the blue screen. It's usually a stop 7F error when the controller changes. So,
right,
yes.
With Windows, whenever you change the hardware, Windows has a hard time with that.
Well, yes, because Windows is loading the drivers for the specific hardware that you have. And in this case, the SATA controller has three modes. It'll be like native, RAID, or AHCI.
Right.
And the AHCI mode is really the preferred mode that you'd want it in, especially if it's SATA 2 to take advantage of native command queuing and the other features of the SATA 300 spec. But I don't know anything about Linux as far as what drivers have to be loaded for Linux to see those SATA hard drives.
Yeah, and I can't say that I've had any experience with this at all, so I can't be of too much help. However, the approach of disconnecting one and connecting it back again after you've installed Linux might be working, but the person had said that they wanted to install Windows on one drive and Linux on another. And so I would think that what would need to be done is you would, when you're installing them that way in a dual boot situation, you always install Windows first because Windows doesn't like to play nice with other operating systems. So you install it first and then you install Linux. And what that will do is as you're installing Ubuntu, at the end of all the screens that you go through, all the little dialog boxes that you go through, the very last screen before it starts writing anything to the disk, there's a little advanced button. You click on that advanced button, and it asks you where you want to put the bootloader. And if you put that bootloader on the same hard drive as the Windows installation, what it will do is it will replace the Windows bootloader and give you the option of booting into Linux or into Windows. So you can install Linux on the second hard drive, let's say, but install the bootloader on the first one, so that when you start up, it's going to start to the same hard drive that it's always used to starting with just Windows installed, except that you're going to have a menu that says, do you want to run Windows today or do you want to run Linux today?
That just seems like such a pain. Why not just load Virtual Machine in Windows and run Linux in it, or use something like Wubi?
Yes, that's two very, very good options for somebody who just wants to try out Linux. And certainly for somebody who wants to use Linux in a dual boot situation that has problems like this, Wubi is a very good option as well. It installs in Windows just like any other Windows software would install, and you can uninstall it from the control panel like any other software if you decide that Linux isn't for you. But
yeah,
when you have it installed, you can dual boot. Again, you get a menu at the beginning that says, do you want to run Linux today or do you want to run Ubuntu today?
Yeah, because I think that putting the operating systems on separate hard drives or using a boot manager is just old school. The technology has really evolved since then quite a bit. So it makes more sense to run it in a virtual machine. If you've got enough power to run Windows Vista, I don't see any reason why you couldn't just start a virtual machine up with Linux in it, since Linux is so lightweight anyway. And
sure.
I understand that the Microsoft's virtual PC software isn't very Linux friendly. But there's another one that is. Was it Virtual Workstation or something like VMware?
VMware. Sure, VMware is probably the one of the most popular ones out there. That's a proprietary virtual machine application, but it is very Linux friendly, and you can use it to run Linux from a Windows machine or the other way around. You can install it on Linux and run Windows under Linux if you wanted to. So either way...
But if you're just starting to learn Linux, if you just want to play with it, you probably want to run Linux within Windows. But if you're running Linux and you just need a few applications in Windows, then it would make sense to run Windows inside of Linux. But in either case, you would download the VMware application, because VMware is available for Linux to run Windows, and it's available for Windows to run Linux.
Yeah, you could run VMware to run a few applications in Windows if you had a Linux machine and you just needed some Windows applications that there aren't any equivalents for Linux. However, most people who run Windows in a VM are either running a server and are serving that Windows application or that Windows operating system to other users, or are testing their whatever they're working on in Windows and have a Linux machine to run it on. There are other ways to run Windows software under Linux that don't require you to run to install a virtual machine and then install a full copy of Windows as well. Those particular applications are something called Wine is one, and Wine is an operating environment that they make a very big deal about saying they're not an emulator of Windows like some video games might have emulators that actually run.
Like MAME, multi-arcade machine emulator.
They're really an environment that translates the request that Windows software would make to the Windows application, or the Windows operating system rather, and translates them into the equivalent Linux requests, so that your Windows software actually can run under Linux. There's another very similar program called Crossover Linux that's available from CodeWeavers. Wine is a free version of what CodeWeavers sells. So Wine is kind of the open source version, and CodeWeavers took the same program that started off as Wine and has forked it off and developed their own product that they now sell to run Windows programs under Linux. So either one of those is a very good alternative. If you have just that one or two applications that you just have to use, and the only version you have is a Windows version because there isn't a Linux equivalent out there.
And then, you know, and Jonathan also mentions a point that, you know, he says, my problem with dual booting is when I need to reinstall Windows, I have more issues to consider. That's a very good point.
Exactly right. One of the nice things about working within a virtual machine is if something goes wrong, you wipe out that virtual machine and just build a new one.
Either that or make a copy of the virtual machine and just, you know, change one letter in the file name and keep it off to the side. And if you mess up yours, you just delete it, rename the other one back, make another copy of it to a different name, and you don't have to go through the time and hassle of recreating it. It's already right there, ready for you.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah, virtual machines are great. And, I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense to dual boot a computer anymore, unless you've got two computers and put Linux on one and Windows on the other one. Then that would make sense. Throw it on a KVM switch, you're good to go. But even that still seems like you're doing it the hard way. It's almost like people still trying to use a crossover cable. I just want to reach out and smack them. You know,
exactly.
The reasons we did that aren't no longer valid with today's technology. Switches are not $1,000 anymore. Routers are very inexpensive. I've seen routers cheaper than a crossover cable.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell you what, that music means it's...
Yeah, music means it's going to be a break. Yep. And we will continue on. This is the Computer America Show. We're doing all Linux tonight. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy joins us this hour and the next hour. We're talking about Linux and more Linux in both hours. I just wanted to kind of bring you up to speed what's happening with the Computer America contest right now. If you go to ComputerAmerica.com, you will see that we're giving away not one, not two, but three computer systems, three System X Medallion laptop systems, 15.4-inch Core 2 dual laptop systems, and they have these are systems are really loaded. They come with the Intel Core 2 Duo. It's got Bluetooth built into it. It's got 802.11 BNG wireless, 2 gigabytes of DDR2 memory, 120 gigabyte hard drive, and as I said, the 0.4 inch screen. But on top of that, we are upgrading the Wi-Fi with the Netgear WNDR 3300 Range Max Wireless N router. This is really screaming fast router that we're going to add to that system. And then on top of that, we are also giving away with each system the Hewlett-Packard OfficeJet printer. This is the C6380 printer. It is 31 pages per minute, and it has Wi-Fi built into the printer, color printers. That means you don't have to have a direct hookup to it. Very, very slick system. And as I said, we're giving away three of these systems. Just go to ComputerAmerica.com, click on the Click and Win Sweepstakes logo that's right there at the homepage. And all you have to do is put in your full name, email, zip code, and hit the submit button. Now, the contest is going to go through November the 30th. That's Sunday. And then registration stops at midnight at that point. And then on the 2nd of December, which is the following Tuesday, Lonnie Paul, Director of E-Commerce for CompUSA, will be on the show with me and Carrie, and we'll award the three computer systems just like that. Now, also, in addition to that, along with each of these systems, we're going to be giving, including a copy of System Mechanic from Iolo Technologies, the PC tune-up experts. And you can check them out at www.iolo, that's iolo.com, and you can get any of Iolo's products directly from CompUSA.com. So, lots of prizes, lots of things that we're giving away in this contest. We're just doing them ongoing. As soon as we finish up one, it usually lasts about a month, Carrie, then we start a new one, and the prizes just keep on rolling out. So that's really, really nice. Go over there, check it out, and I think that make sure that you're registered for the contest. Larry, I just wanted to now we're going to go into the next hour here. I know we have some emails that we want to read, people who have sent them in with questions from the Going Linux podcast. And we're also going to continue on with can I use my old familiar software if I switch to Linux? Before we go to the break, where do we last leave it? Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about the fact that if you wanted to dual boot, you're probably better off installing
right.
Linux on one computer and Windows on another computer and putting a home network together, and those systems that you're giving away would be perfect for that with a wireless printer and all
sure.
that stuff. That's great stuff.
Yes, it is. And wireless, of course, that's one of the focuses of the contest, is that we're doing a wireless contest. So that's where we had all these wireless things. And, of course, you can do wireless in Linux, too, right?
Absolutely. So, and absolutely. That's one of our next show topics coming up is home networking.
Well, in the meantime, we got another full hour of the Computer America show coming straight at you here. And we'll continue on with our All Linux show tonight with Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. We're going to be right back after your local and national news for another full hour of the Computer America Show. Don't go anywhere.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
News, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Carrie Holzman.
And we continue on our All Linux show tonight. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and as we do every third Tuesday, we devote the entire show to Linux. Joining us is Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And, Carrie, Larry, we have a caller who has a question. Let's go to Escondido, California, and talk to Richard, who has a question about Linux. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, Carrie. Hi, Craig. Oh, boy.
And Larry.
A senior moment. Anyway, yeah, you know, you talked about, you know, the guy standing on the, you know, on the cliff, you know, and looking, he's going to jump over to Linux or not.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm that guy. I can't even see anything.
I knew you were out there, and I had you in mind. I knew you were listening. You say that? Yeah.
No.
His name's not Cliff.
I'm blind.
Oh, all right.
And so I wanted to ask a question because I am trying to bring up an IBM ThinkPad, and it only has one hard drive on it. And the thing is, can I use a memory stick to load Linux on, and what Linux that can talk to me because I can't see the darn screen or the darn...
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. And you can install Linux on a memory stick, and depending on the size of the memory stick, you can install, let's say, something like Ubuntu on a memory stick that is a gigabyte or more. And Ubuntu is one of those applications or one of those operating systems that actually comes with screen reader software and other software that is specifically designed for accessibility.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
Now the thing is on the memory stick, so it has to be over a gig.
Well, I say that because you probably want to start with the live CD, and you could put a bootable version of the live CD onto a memory stick and use it from there. That would allow you to use the operating system just as though you had put it on a CD and stuck it into your CD drive. It would also allow you, if you decided later to install it, to click the install icon from there and go ahead and install it there. If you have a version of Ubuntu installed on another machine. There is also in the latest version of Ubuntu utility under the administration menu that allows you to copy the operating system onto a USB stick so that you can do just what I suggested. And if you have a USB stick that's over a gigabyte, that is plenty big enough to hold a CD's worth of stuff, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is a laptop.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know you can put two hard drives in this laptop. I have no idea.
Right.
So that's why I was wondering, because even if I wanted to go over, I'd have to somehow or other.
If you couldn't do an internal, you could do an external laptop. External laptop.
Oh, on
external hard drive. You can do an external hard drive. I mean, yeah.
On the USB.
Yeah, exactly. Would that not work for him, Larry?
Sure, absolutely. And the other alternative, of course, is to do what we were suggesting earlier. If you're running Windows now, to insert. Do you have a CD drive on your laptop?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so if you could download the ISO image from the Ubuntu site and then use your Windows CD burning software to burn that to a CD.
Okay, this laptop does not have a burner. So.
Doesn't have a burner. Okay,
no.
Then that's going to be a little bit more difficult. But
of course,
there is also an online Wubi installer that allows you to install.
Now wait a minute.
Ubuntu.
With Wubi, what operating system do you have to use?
With Wubi, you have to start with Windows, and
what
then
version
you can,
of Windows?
I'd have to check the Wubi site and find out. Let me just do that now.
Richard, what version of Windows are you running?
Good question.
On the laptop, XP.
Oh, no problem with XP.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the Wubi site, it'll allow you to install a number of different distributions of Linux, but I would recommend Ubuntu because I know it has the accessibility software that you need for screen reading and other things that you would need as a blind computer user. And then what that does is it installs Ubuntu on your computer just like it was a Windows application. And then when you go to boot your computer, you have a menu that starts up when you start your computer that says, do you want to boot into Ubuntu or do you want to boot into Windows? And you can choose one or the other. And it actually installs it on the hard drive that you have in the computer now as a file under Windows.
Okay. Now, the other question is, if I get both of these on there, can I transfer information between the two, like data files?
While you're in Linux, yes. While you're in Windows, no. So Linux has the ability to read the Windows XP NTFS file system, which is what Windows XP uses. It's the way that Windows codes the file information on the hard drive. But Windows doesn't know how to look at anything other than a Windows partition or the Windows file system, so it won't be able to look at what's on the Linux hard drive, or the Linux portion of the hard drive.
Yeah, that figures. Windows doesn't like to look at anything else, but anyway.
That's true.
All right, Larry. Listen,
okay,
thanks for calling, good questions.
Richard.
All right, and Richard, exactly. Richard, keep listening. Okay, take care. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. You can be just like Richard and give us a call 866-606-TALK, the toll free number 866-606-8255. Live at ComputerAmerica.com is the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We're talking all Linux in this hour, and as we did the previous hour. And if you have questions about Linux, as Richard did, certainly a great way to get the questions answered. So,
in the meantime, Larry's brought some questions with him.
Yes, he has.
Yes, I have.
Where should we start?
Well, let's
got a
start
couple
with
here.
Laura, since she's in our chat room.
Ah.
She sent me an email a few days ago and asked, I work as a system administrator at a county office of education, and some of our projects have included the installation of SUSE OS, which is a version of Linux, and configuring Dan's Guardian and Squid. Those are filtering software, and the kind of filtering software that would protect children from bad websites and things. So they're configuring Dan's Guardian and Squid on those systems for school filters, and some cases the firewall as well. I have unwanted iMacs and G3, G4 towers from the schools. I would really like to put a Linux distro onto them and possibly send them back into the classroom or use them for other projects. Would it be worth it to refurbish the Macs to a Linux operating system? And my recommendation to Laura was, yes, you should probably look at a couple of different things that you could install onto those older Macs. There is some software, in fact, the SUSE operating system that their school is already using has a version that would work on older Macs. It is a version of OpenSUSE, and we'll have a link in the show notes to how to get that particular distribution of Linux for the Mac. Another one that is specifically designed for Macintosh software is something called Yellow Dog Linux. It's a version of Linux that is built on the Red Hat Enterprise Linux, its downside is that it is not free. They charge $40 for that, and in an educational environment where you're trying to recover some older hardware, spending even $40 is probably more than you want to spend. The last but not least is something that one of my Linux podcasting buddies suggested to Laura, and that is to try Debian. Debian is the original Linux operating system that Ubuntu and many other Linux modern Linux distributions are based on. Not that Debian isn't modern, it's just the original, if you will. And they have a version for the PowerPC that's available from their website as well. And in our show notes, I'm sure we can include links to all of that.
Yeah, now it's important to know that the older Macs that she's mentioning are PowerPCs. These are the ones that before they went over to the Intel platform. The Macs that go over to that are on the Intel platform, the versions of Linux that they're running, are they in fact Windows versions of Linux, or are they Linux designed specifically for the Intel version of the Mac?
No, they're the versions of Linux that you would install on a Windows machine or an Intel-based machine are exactly the same as the ones you would install on the Intel-based Macs.
Okay.
So it's the same Linux. So it's only the PowerPCs that you need a special version of Linux for.
And so I guess that made things a lot easier in the Linux community when they went over to the Intel-based machines, because then they only had to write the same distro. They didn't have to write two different versions for the two different machines.
Oh, sure. But those versions of Linux will be around for quite a while. One of the reasons that Linux has become so popular is because a lot of folks want to keep that old hardware alive. There are old Windows 95 machines that are running Linux because Windows 95 is no longer supported, hasn't been for a long time, but Linux runs them just as fast and in some cases faster than they did under Windows 95. So a lot of folks want to keep that older hardware running because it's still good, and they want something that's a good modern operating system that is fully supported, and these Linux distributions just keep that stuff humming along. So I'm sure the PowerPC versions will be continue to be supported for quite a while.
Okay. So hopefully that answers the question for Laura, who is also, by the way, in the Computer America chat room.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good enough. Did you mention the Slackintosh Linux?
No, I didn't mention that. That actually is something else that I, thanks for reminding me, that I suggested to Laura. We'll talk about that when we come back after the break.
Okay, Slackware on the Mac. Slackintosh. Interesting. All right, we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux this hour. Stay with us. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK. 8255. We'll get John to get you through. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy continues on with us. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. It is the third Tuesday of the month, and we do the entire show on Linux. So just before the break, we were going to talk about the Slackintosh Linux. Slackware on the Mac. What is that?
Just as the name suggests, Slackware is a geek's dream as far as Linux is concerned. And I didn't actually read all of what Laura had wrote me in her email. She had mentioned that she had had some experience with Slackintosh, or excuse me, Slackware as her first experience with Linux and was kind of turned off to it. I decided to suggest Slackintosh, which is a version of Slackware that's specifically designed for the older Mac, again, for the PowerPC, and with a caveat that she might want to stay away from it her experience with Slackware wasn't all that attractive in the beginning, in favor of going with something like Debian or like one of the other ones that I had suggested, like OpenSUSE or something like that. But it is, according to their website, it was tested and built on an iBook 2, which my understanding, I'm not a Mac hardware aficionado, but their website says that's a G3 Mac, 600 megahertz, and they also built and tested it on a Mac Mini. So given that they are building it using a Mac, it should run on a Mac with no problem at all.
There you go. All right. Well, I know Laura is listening in the Computer America chat room, so hopefully this is proving to be useful. Now, we to her, so you have some other email. You have one from Tom in Virginia here who has a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, Tom wrote to us, and he wrote to my co-host, Tom, and I. So Tom in Virginia writes, "Hey, guys, love the show. My question is, when running any version of Linux, I'm using Ubuntu, is it really necessary to install and configure a firewall? I do not have a router already connected. Or excuse me, I do have a router already connected. What about antivirus? Is this something I should have installed and installed and going, like in Windows? I've seen in the repositories the antivirus software available for Linux, and so I'm asking why."
Okay, all right.
"Thanks much, Tom in Virginia." Well, and as you can imagine, he's referring to the fact that Linux touts itself as not needing antivirus software and not needing a firewall. And my recommendation to Thomas was, no, you don't need either of those. You have a hardware router already, and that is acting as your firewall. You could install a Linux firewall if you desired. It is something that is very recommended if, Tom, you're running a Linux server. You definitely want to have a firewall up and running because there's more going on there than there is in a in the average consumer's desktop computer or laptop computer. But if you're just running your own personal computer, you don't need a firewall. And in today's age where virus writers are looking to get the maximum exposure of their viruses, they're looking for those unprotected Windows computers that haven't been updated with the Windows updates. And there are plenty of bootleg copies of Windows out there that people haven't paid for, and because they can't pass the Windows Genuine Advantage, they can't get the updates, and so their computers are vulnerable. So those are the ones that the virus writers are after. There are lots of them out there, many more of those than there are Linux computers, so they simply don't write viruses for Linux like they do for Windows, much like they don't write viruses for Mac, simply because there's not enough of them out there to make it worthwhile. They're out to get computers converted over to sending out spam and other nasty stuff, and they can do that much easier with Windows computers. So there is antivirus software out there for Linux. It's, again, for those Linux servers that absolutely need to have the best protection, because being servers, they're opening themselves up in ways that the average consumer's computer just isn't opened up. So you don't need an antivirus for
that. And as we well know, so much of the internet is run on Linux machines. So
yes, certainly. That's exactly right.
Yeah, exactly. All right, listen, we're going to break and we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or, of course, the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be right back with more Linux. Stay with us.
Computer America.
And this is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Just want to mention that we have our Buddy List winner of the week, which, Carrie, I know you announced, Linda Hobby. Linda wins the Logitech Wave keyboard. And also, Linda gets a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite, and that's PC Tools' all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And also, when we get a call, an email, a feedback, or a chat room visit, someone who contacts us from outside of North America, that person gets a copy of PC Tools Spyware Doctor. And you know, we don't get in the running. You just get a copy of the latest version of Spyware Doctor. So we've got some really good things for everybody. Again, make sure that you're on the buddy list. Subscribe to it, and that's very simple to do right from the homepage at ComputerAmerica.com. It just says "Get on our buddy list." It can't be more clear than that. And just put in your an email address, your first and last name, and click the join button. Also, I wanted to mention that we continue to get. Thankfully, it's not as frequent, but we still get people. I get emails from telling us or asking me, I'm not getting the newsletter. Well, we've gone one step further to make sure that you do get it if you're subscribed. And right there in that same box, right at the bottom, says, not getting our newsletter? Here's how to fix it. And you click on that, we've dedicated an entire page on how to whitelist the Computer America newsletter, thanks to our good buddy Steve Bass, who provided that for us, and that will tell you exactly now. On Wednesday Madness, I'm going to read an email because they didn't follow the instructions carefully, and it was kind of frustrating because we told them exactly how to do it. My point is just follow. If you follow the instructions on how to whitelist Computer America newsletter, and you do it step by step, you should have no problem. So please, we put it up there for your help, and hopefully that will help you to get the show reminder. Larry Bushy continues on with us here at the Computer America show. We're doing an all Linux program. And just before the break, we were, and I just blew it right out of my head. We were talking about, I don't know why this happens. What were we talking about? Because I had my rejoinder notes and I just lost them. We were talking about the...
it's gone right out of my head as well.
we were answering the emails, right, that Larry's received?
Yeah, no, there was something. There was another point that I wanted to make about.
Oh, it was about the firewalls and the antivirus.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay, came back. Thank you. Yes. It was the fact that we mentioned the fact that Linux, like the Mac, doesn't have as many viruses written for it as the Windows operating system because the Windows obviously is the one that if someone's going to take the time and effort to design a virus, they want to make sure that it's going to give them the most bang for their buck, I guess, if you will, because
Right. Viruses
aren't there to do the Kilroy was here thing. They're there to steal things from you, your money, your information, your passwords, your bank accounts.
Or your bandwidth to send out spam.
Exactly. Yeah. And I guess my point is that, there you go. Why don't we, I'm going to remember my point now when we come back. I wonder why that is, because since Linux runs so much of the internet, you would think that there would be so many more viruses out there for this very versatile operating system. We're going to break just for 60 seconds and we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. We'll continue on right after this. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, live at ComputerAmerica.com with the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Carrie and I have Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And so my question to you about not too many viruses are written for the Linux operating system, and I kind of scratch my head on that because so much of the web is run on Linux machines, you would think more viruses would be targeted to these devices, the servers, Linux servers, because since so much of the net is being run on it, you would think that it would be a really great way to piggyback onto all of that power. Why isn't that happening?
Well, and Addison in the chat room just indicated another good point about it. He says, I would think that there would be a ton of malware for Linux because the code for Linux itself is available to anybody. It's open source. So that's another good point. Why is there no viable virus for Linux out there? And two things. First of all, think about put yourself in the shoes of a virus writer, if you can do that, and you want to infiltrate as many computers as you want, and you want your virus to sit there undetected so that you can go and do what you want to do, whether it's steal passwords or steal bank account numbers or whether you just want to sit there and spew email spam out when you desire to do that. You want to look for unprotected machines. And the Windows operating system and the Linux operating system are built very differently. Linux is built more hardened to begin with. Just its structure is more resistant to viruses. And the fact that it's open makes it very easy for somebody who is talented in writing viruses to write a virus for Linux. However, it makes it very easy for those people writing the distributions themselves, writing the Linux software, to discover those viruses and write them out, and to write antivirus for them as well. So it's kind of a self-correcting thing going on there.
So you're saying its open characteristics makes it harder to squirrel away or hide the code, the malicious code, whereas in Windows, a lot of people don't know what's going on. It's kind of protected.
Right, because you can't see the code, no matter how hard you try. It's just not there. And if you're a programmer, you can look at the Linux code and you can see, oh, wait a minute, there is something that is playing around with my internet connection. Let me look in the code and see what that is. Oh, that's not Linux code. That's a virus. Let me just take that out.
Uh-huh.
And so as a programmer, you could take it out of your own system if you wanted to.
Because you have the source code to do that.
It's exactly right.
Whereas Windows,
Windows, you don't. And the other thing is, because there are fewer Mac computers and Linux computers out there, even though a good number of the Linux, computers servers that run the internet are running Linux, those are protected in many ways by the internet service providers that run those servers. They are also, because they're protected and because there are fewer of them, the virus writers take the easy route. It's just much easier pickings to pick on Windows because there are so many unprotected, unupdated Windows computers out there. Not everybody updates. Gets on the second Tuesday of the month, gets the Windows updates, and there are people out there who can't get them because they're running bootleg copies of Windows because it's just so expensive to buy a copy.
Very good points. Excellent points, actually.
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess the bottom line is that because the source code is available and it's open, therefore, if you do something malicious, it's easily detected.
Easily detected and easily corrected. Yeah.
Okay. And the people who are running these Linux servers and everything, they're all obviously quite proficient at Linux, at accessing the Linux code and looking at it.
Sure.
And the distributions that are made available obviously are all come to virus free. I mean, because the people who are making these decisions certainly know what they're doing as well.
Oh, that's absolutely right. If you go to the site, the legitimate site for downloading the copy of Linux, you get a virus free copy of Linux for sure. I haven't seen any spoof sites out there, that, like there are for some other software, where you go to the site and you download what you think is free software and you end up with spyware. I haven't seen that kind of a site that spoofs a Linux distribution site, but I'm sure somebody's thought of it.
All right, now you have an email from AJ in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I have just installed Intrepid IBEX, Ubuntu 8.10. Does Intrepid have Skype? I've looked for it on Hardy, Ubuntu 8.04, and I know it exists. Anyway, I'm missing a repository link that I have to add, or third-party software that I have to add, or third-party software that needs to be enabled, something like that, he wants to know.
Okay. Yes, and AJ, yes, Skype does exist for Linux. It's one of those programs that is cross-platform. It exists for Mac and Linux and
yep.
Windows. And it is available for Intrepid IBEX. Intrepid IBEX is Ubuntu's latest release of Ubuntu. And there are a couple of ways you can get it. You can go to the Skype website and go to their download page for Linux, the Linux version of Skype, and it'll show that it's available for Ubuntu 7.04 and later versions, and of course this is a later version he's talking about here. Once you've downloaded it, you right-click it in, like you would in Windows and install it. The program that you use to install it happens to be called GDebi, for reasons we could get into if you
yeah.
like.
Yeah, well, you get these names. All right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a better way to do that. When you do that from the Skype website, you download it, you install it, and then if you want an update, you have to go back to the Skype site. And as we've said in previous Computer America shows, one of the advantages of Linux is that when you install software, even software applications, from the Linux repositories, Linux will keep those applications up to date with the latest versions, as well as the Linux software itself. And so there is a repository that you can add called Medibuntu, Medibuntu. And it's not medical Ubuntu, but media Ubuntu, Medi, Medibuntu.
Yeah.
And we'll have a link to the Medibuntu site. They have a very easy to follow instructions for adding that repository to your Ubuntu set of repositories. And then once you've done that, Skype is available in the package manager. And the package manager, for those who haven't listened to the show before, is the software that comes in Linux that lets you go out and look at the Linux software candy store out there
yeah.
and pick the free applications that you want to download. So you go there, you install Skype from there, and then from then on, if there's a new version of Skype comes out, Linux will keep it up to date. Ubuntu will keep it up to date for AJ and for anybody else who's using it.
Well, there you go. Because I knew that Skype, I mean, we use Skype here at the Computer America show. We use it for our voicemail system that we use
sure.
from people. And it's and it works, you know, on Windows machines, Mac machines, and, of course, obviously Linux. It truly is a multi-platform application. That allows
yeah,
you
to... it's a very valuable application. And one of the reasons it doesn't come in Ubuntu out of the box is because it's proprietary software. It's not free and open source software. It's free of charge,
right.
but it's not open source. So the Ubuntu folks, they provide Ubuntu Linux with only free and open source software installed. And there are these additional repositories that you can add, Medibuntu being one of them, that allow you to install proprietary software as well.
So it makes perfect sense. All right, yeah. All right, we're going to continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight with Larry Bushy, and we'll continue on with them after these messages. You're listening to the Computer America Show. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. All this hour and last hour, Larry Bushy, who has been with us, he is our Linux correspondent. And tell us, I know you're doing the Going Linux podcast. What's the next Going Linux podcast episode going to be about, Larry?
Well, we have, as you know, we do two-month topic expose, if you will. We take the first month and cover a topic for new Linux users, and then we take the second month to go into a little bit more depth for people who have had more experience with it. And this coming episode after our Computer America episode will be about home networking. We're going to talk about how to set up a home network, what components you need, and about wireless networking, and it's all the same as it is in Windows.
I got to tell you, home networking and wireless networking is such a dream, especially if you have a home that has like two, three, or more computers in it. I mean, being able to share printers. I have in my office, a color inkjet printer and a laser printer, and my wife has one printer up in her office. But now she can just any computer now can direct any content to any printer in the home. It's just really nice because sometimes you just want to crank out 50 or 60 pages. You don't want to do that in an inkjet. You want to do that on a laser. It'll do it, a lot more quickly. Or if you want to print color, and it's just so nice to be able to use peripherals like that in a wireless or network environment. And
absolutely.
It's just a dream. And, of course, as you say, you can do that with Linux as well. Is it about the same level of complexity in Linux that it is with Windows? Or?
Yeah, the basic setup is very, very straightforward and easy. Actually, connecting to a wireless network is easier on Linux than it is on Windows. And you don't have the sharing confusion and complication that you have when you're trying to share, let's say, a printer between Vista and XP. I've heard a lot of horror stories about that, and we'll get into those kinds of sharing issues in our advanced episode in a couple of months.
All right, well, Larry, listen, I want to thank you so much for being here with us. It's always, it flies by the third Tuesday of the month, all dedicated to Linux. The Going Linux podcast, we have a link to that in our show notes at computeramerica.com. Larry, thanks so much for being with us here tonight.
My pleasure, thanks.
And we look forward to next time, okay? Take care.
You bet.
Bye-bye now. All right, Kerry, tomorrow night is going to be Wednesday Madness.
That's right.
I understand that this is not confirmed, but I think Lonnie Paul from CompUSA might be stopping in. He's going to be talking about their Pink Friday event that they're going to be throwing. So he might stop in for that. And, of course, Wednesday Madness, the last couple of Wednesday Madness, we've had so many people and so many things going on. We just haven't had enough time to get to all your feedbacks and emails. Hopefully we'll have more time to get to them. A lot of them have come in, so we'll get to that. Because that's one of the things we do at Wednesday Madness. We read your emails, your feedbacks, your voicemails, and we kind of would try to address them. Because usually on a Wednesday Madness, it's anything goes. And hopefully tomorrow, certainly that will be the case. So that about wraps up the Computer America show for this evening. Don't forget to make sure that you're signed up for the buddy list at ComputerAmerica.com. Gets our show reminder delivered to you every Monday morning because that's the only place you can find the entire lineup worth of shows. It's in the Buddy List show reminder. And also, you get entered into the Friday night drawing where we give those two terrific prizes away every single week from PC Tools and from Logitech. So that about wraps it up. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We will see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.